This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne here, and thank you for tuning in. Have you ever wondered words' origins and how we came up with certain words for specific actions like hello and goodbye? Author of Words Struck, The Fun and Fascination of Language, Susanna Jansen explains. Thank you for joining me, Susanna.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Mason.
When did your fascination with words begin?
Gosh, I think it probably began at birth because I was hearing not only English but also some Dutch from my father, and then also my father in conversation with my grandmother. My mother's first language was Italian. I wasn't hearing a lot of that because she didn't have anyone to speak with out in California when she came out from New York. But I just kept up with my interest, my investigations, my thinking, my wondering about language all my life, and started my first foreign language when I was in high school, taking Spanish.
Yeah, I think Spanish is what most people take, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know I took that in high school. But when it comes to the English language, you know, is it one of the easiest languages to learn?
I don't think English is. Spanish is said to be an easy language to learn. I try telling that to an American taking on their first language as an adult, and they won't find Spanish easy, but it's a simpler language to learn than many, and it is easier to learn than English. English has one thing that's very easy, and that's our verb. Our verb usually doesn't change much throughout the present tense, the past tense, etc. For example, we say, I skate, you skate, he skates, she skates. There's a little difference there. We skate, they skate, you all skate. The past tense, nothing changes. I skated, you skated, we skated, they skated. So this is very, very simple. But English is just a bear to pronounce and to spell.
Actually, I was thinking, even me as a native speaker, I know, like I joke around and tell people I speak two languages, English and bad English.
And, you know, I always pride myself on good spelling, but I misspelled a word the other day. I was writing, I was writing this article that I'm going to be sending in today for my column, and I used the word desiccated, and I spelled it D-E-S-S-I-C-A-T-E-D, and it got lit up on my computer page, and I thought, no, I did that right. I never believe I have made a mistake. But it turns out I looked it up, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I've been spelling this word wrong probably for decades. It's spelled D-E-S-I-C-C-A-T-E-D. So I was putting two S's, but it actually has two C's, desiccated. I was humbled.
I'm not sure if this is humble or not, but I know as a child I always got confused with box and socks. So, because they sound the same, but they're spelled completely different, obviously. It's funny how, why does the English language do that? Like, why is it that phonetically it sounds the same, but it's written differently?
We have so many words like that and so many confusing things in our language. Like if you think about all the words that have O-U-G-H in them, well, tough and rough happen to rhyme, but then there's through and thorough and S-L-O-U-G-H, slew. This is impossible. And really, a lot of the reason for the irregularity and difficulty of English is that about, you know, half of English comes from Latin roots, and half of English comes from Germanic roots. These are Germanic roots and Latin roots are very, very different. And then, of course, there's a smattering of other things thrown in. There's a couple of hundred words from Arabic and many other languages. But because of the Germanic and the Latin clash, I would call it, we just have very irregular spelling, irregular pronunciation, a lot of unpredictability in our language. And getting back to what we said before, Mason, this is what makes it so hard to learn.
Is English the same all around the world? Obviously, the basis of it, but are there different phrases?
Well, definitely. Like if we compare American English to British English, there's big differences in vocabulary and phrases. And, you know, of course, English, right now there are more second language speakers of English than there are native language speakers of English. So in other words, you and I as native speakers, we're in the minority worldwide.
Wow.
And so influences are coming into English constantly in the form of vocabulary and phrases and even slight changes in pronunciation depending upon what country it is. But if we go back and even just look at England, well, I'll just give you an example of a difference in vocabulary. I would tell my students this in the classroom because they were college students and they could handle a little bit of scandal, you know. I would say, well, you know, if we were in England, you would turn to your neighbor next to you if you wanted to erase something on your page, and you would say, have you a rubber? Have you a rubber I could borrow? Asking for a pencil eraser. And, of course, that doesn't mean that to us at all, but there are many words that just have simply a different meaning, words and phrases, between England and America. And, gosh, I can only imagine what's going on in China with so many Chinese people learning English as a second language.
Oh, man, it's actually, I think, pretty funny. I know on the Internet I like to look at their T-shirts, and their children will be walking around with swear words. And it's perfectly fine. And it's like, no, that's swearing in English. But it's funny, regardless, because it's lost in translation, obviously.
Yeah, well, it's funny, but, you know, it also is very cool. Whether they know it's a swear word or not, it's just cool to have a T-shirt with an English word on it.
Yeah, like random words, like cat cloud or something. It's like...
yeah, exactly. What a market.
Yeah, right. Now... I know that there's a lot of history in our words. What about the word hello?
Oh, well, the word hello started out really in quite ancient times. I mean, we're talking like the 15th century, 1400 in old German. It was a word used to hail, to get someone's attention or to hail a ferry boat or something like that. And there were all these different variations, hello, hillo, holler. And that's actually related to the Spanish word for hello, which is hola. But, you know, both Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell were born in 1847, and they just leapfrogged each other through the U.S. Patent Office because they were coming up with world-changing inventions. So when Mr. Bell invented the telephone, or he's credited with inventing the telephone, Edison had already invented... the microphone. And so this made Bell's telephone an apparatus that could actually revolutionize business communication. But it was open on both ends. You didn't pick up a receiver. And so Alexander Graham Bell said that the word to get the attention of the person on the other end had to be spoken loudly and clearly, and it should be ahoy. Thomas Edison disagreed, and he said, how about hello? Because you are trying to get someone's attention. Well, Bell, this was a debate. This was a polemic. Bell disagreed, and he used ahoy for the rest of his life on his own invention. It was always used for business in those days. But, of course, hello won out. And the early telephone books for the business world instructed the users to employ the word hello. And it became the official way to start a telephone conversation. And interestingly enough, Mason, it also revolutionized social conversation because up until then, you know, in 19th century, even in America, one wasn't supposed to initiate a conversation unless they'd been introduced first. But now with this word hello and the popularization of it, people could start a conversation simply by saying hello.
So wait.
And not waiting to be introduced.
So how would you introduce yourself? Like, oh, hello, I'm... Or you wouldn't say hello. Then what would you start out with?
Well, you wouldn't. You simply wouldn't unless you were introduced by someone else.
So a third party would actually have to introduce you then?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, exactly.
That's actually pretty funny. So you would actually have to know somebody who knew the person that you wanted to speak with. Oh, man.
It's unbelievable in this day and age, but you know, like if you think about old Victorian England and things like that, you know, what we've seen on old films like Pride and Prejudice, you can see how that would play out and how that would also lend itself to the social mores of the time in America.
You know, what were other greetings besides hello? What about, like, good morning, good afternoon? How come that hasn't won out?
Well, yes, good morning, good day, good evening, good afternoon. Those were very common greetings, you know, used in, well, even as early as the 16th century. And interestingly, if I can get into goodbye a little bit, that's how we got our phrase goodbye, because goodbye started out much earlier. I mean, you know, like in the 14th and 15th centuries, goodbye was God be with you.
Oh, wow.
Or God be with ye. And it was a lovely phrase that everybody said when they were wishing well as they took their leave. But by the next century, the 15th century, it had become contracted to something that must have sounded kind of like God be ye, God be ye. But people were already saying good evening, goodbye, I'm sorry, good evening, good day, good afternoon. And so it was just a hop, skip, and a jump before God be with you became secularized completely to goodbye. But it didn't sit well with a lot of people, losing God to goodbye. And some people just thought it was trendy and degenerate and popular only among certain slices of society, we might say. But, you know, just like we think of today, one day's scandal or one day's trendy utterance becomes the next year's reality and status quo. We've been saying goodbye ever since.
Now, I know that for today, goodbye is kind of like even formal, a definitive way to end a conversation. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't ever the case then. Like, how did it become from something that was almost slang to now it's a formal, definitive thing?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's the evolution of language, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, I had not given that a lot of thought. Even on the phone, or even if we're leaving on a plane to be traveling through India for 3 months, we usually just say, bye-bye, bye, I'll be seeing you, bye. Goodbye is sort of a more definitive leave-taking. And interestingly, you know, the word adios in Spanish and addio in Italian, adieu in French, they're all related, of course, and they tend to be more, more permanent or formal goodbyes, whereas you might say, you know, hasta luego, see you later, as we do in English for just our usual bye-bye.
You know, I got someone called me. It was the wrong number. And they kept saying bueno. And I'm like, I don't speak Spanish. But I know that bueno means good. How come it's also a hello? Like, I don't get that.
It's an odd thing because, yes, absolutely right. Bueno in Spanish means good. But that is how Mexican people answer the telephone.
Yes.
It's not true necessarily in other Spanish-speaking countries, but Mexican people do answer the telephone with bueno. Bueno not only means good, but it's also a filler word. Like in a phrase, before I start to say what I intend to say, I might say bueno, meaning well. So saying bueno to answer the phone is sort of like picking up the receiver and saying, well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get it now. That actually makes a lot of sense. I didn't think of that as a filler.
It's a little odd, but in Italian, this seems odd to me. I was so surprised my first trip to Italy. People were picking up the phone, and I heard them saying, pronto, which means ready. And that's so interesting because back in the Alexander Graham Bell day, another possible contender for how to answer that early telephone was, are you ready to talk, or what is wanted, or are you there? And hear the Italians say, ready, when they answer the phone. I'm fascinated by that.
That is actually really cool. Now, I know that Shakespeare, he, you know, obviously his work has inspired a lot of people, but it also changed the English language. How did he do that?
Well, with Shakespeare, we see for the first time in print words that he had invented many out of whole cloth, but the majority of his inventions were combinations of words, or they were words with suffixes added on, or prefixes added on. And I can give you just a few examples of, he added prefixes on like un and in and dis. And so for the first time, his readers were seeing words like unclog, undress, uneducated, but also indistinguishable and disheartened. But he was also wordsmith with the suffixes, and he, to the word fashion, he added the "able" onto the end of for fashionable, and to the noun event, he added "full" to make eventful, and to the noun daunt, or the verb daunt, either one, he added on "less" for dauntless, and he made remorseless. And then there's this whole group of words that I find so fascinating, because we just take them for granted. We think, oh, well, yeah, that's so logical. But he combined two unrelated words, and occasionally three, to make a whole new concept. For example, hot-blooded and cold-blooded, faint-hearted, fancy-free, bedroom, an eyeball. Don't we take that for granted?
Oh, yeah.
Bedroom, eyeball, of course. But also eyesore and fortune teller and laughing stock, shooting star, star-crossed lovers, the primrose path and wild goose chase. I was so surprised when I learned that, because up until then, I had thought of Shakespeare principally in terms of the many phrases and maxims and proverbs we had gotten from him, like brevity is the soul of wit, and neither a borrower nor a lender be. But, oh my goodness, just the vocabulary contribution he made is tremendous.
You know, I'm lucky enough to have your book right in front of me, and I actually adore the fact that in front of every chapter you give like a little synopsis of like what every little area is, and I think that's actually really cool.
Well, I just felt compelled to do that because I thought, oh my gosh, I've written a book that sort of defies description, except that it is about words, language, and culture, but every one of my 60 chapters is on a different topic. There's a couple of them, like Shakespeare. I wrote two pieces on Shakespeare, two pieces on metaphor. But, you know, there's at least 55 wholly different topics in my book. And so I thought it worthwhile and helpful to the reader to write that short synopsis and to give a hint at what was coming next.
Where can people pick this book up at? It's called Wordstruck, The Fun and Fascination of Language.
Uh-huh. Well, they can certainly get it on Amazon.com, and they can get it in bookstores. Also on my website, which is SusannaJansen.com. And Jansen is spelled J-A-N-S-S-E-N, and Susanna is spelled S-U-S-A-N-N-A, which is the Italian spelling of Susanna for my mother. So SusannaJansen.com is my website.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your book.
It's been a delight. Thank you, Mason.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.